Welcome to Slay, the podcast where we dive into all aspects of health and fitness. I'm your host, Louise Hazel, and today we're going to be discussing the topic of activism. And joining me this week is one of the most hilarious people I've ever met. She made a name for herself on YouTube with a viral video called Shit White Women Say to Black Girls, and she's been a hit ever since. She's an acclaimed writer and producer, and she's the director of social commentary and social happenings here at Slay. It's the one and only Francesca Ramsey.
I didn't know that I had a job here. Oh, that's so sweet.
What do you mean you didn't know?
I didn't know that I was the director of social here, but now that I think about it, I love it.
100%. Like, we always come to you like, Fran, what's going on? Give us the scoop. What happened last night?
It's so funny. I'm that person with my friends too. My writing partner, Shamika, we're so different. She's very offline. Mm-hmm. And so I am the person who tells her every day, here's who everyone's mad at on the internet. Here's what's out. Here's what everybody's talking about. And she always is like, how do you keep up with this? And it's a blessing and a curse. I feel burdened by
it. You're a blessing to us. And we're so happy to have you on. But one of the things I just wanted to say, like literally from the bottom of my heart, is that we are so impressed. And I know I said this to you before, but everybody here at Slay is so, so impressed with the way in which you've approached the recent writer strikes, which affects you obviously very personally and very deeply. And we were talking the other day about, you know, people that have turned like lemons into lemonade, and you are definitely one of those people. Mm. Fran, we'd love to talk to you a little bit more about the writer's strike,
sure. How
it impacts you directly. But first and foremost, you've been super active on social media ever since the get-go. It's been how many days now since the writer's strike started?
We're at 141 days for the writers, and I think we're a little over 40 for the actors. And I'm in both unions, so yeah. I'm on double duty for the strike, and I'm really thankful that I have the platform that I do and that I have a captive audience that cares what I have to say, and I feel a sense of responsibility to use it wisely and advocate for myself and others. And so, you know, there was never a question for me the day the strike started. I was like, all right, let's go. This is my job now.
And break it down for us at home, for those people that don't know and haven't been up to speed on what's been going
sure.
on. Why are the writer strikes happening, and how do they impact the viewers, the people that are watching the content at
yeah,
home?
So the most Cliff Notes version I can share is that the Writers Guild of America has a contract with the AMPTP, which represents over 300 studios and production companies and networks, including Netflix, Hulu, CBS, Fox, all the places that you get content. And that contract outlines our working relationship, things like how much you get paid for an episode of television, how much money goes into our healthcare pensions, how many steps are included when you write a feature, things like that. And so this comes up for renegotiation every 3 years. And so we would have negotiated this in 2020, but because of the pandemic,
right.
everything was shut down and we didn't have any leverage. And so then come to 2023, we were negotiating with the studios. We were unable to find a resolution on a number of issues, and so we called a strike. And there are so many things that are included in this contract, but the big ones are protections against AI. We're really concerned with the potential that the studios could use artificial intelligence to write scripts based off of our intellectual property and thus be able to make money without actually paying and crediting us.
I've been hearing some crazy things about AI technology and its impact on, you know, on writers' livelihoods. What is the threat? Like, what is the current threat? I've heard that, you know, obviously the actors can use their voices
right.
and likeness and literally just record a whole episode of television. Like, tell me the extent and the things that you've heard.
Yeah, so I mean, the AI is a concern for writers and actors. Like you mentioned, for actors, it's the idea of being able to use AI to replicate people's voices or their likeness. And then again, the person whose likeness is being used and not being compensated for it. For the writers, there is a world in which the studio could presumably have their own version of AI that they then feed information to, and then the AI could pop out a script. And then a writer could potentially be tasked with rewriting the script. Well, currently our contract says nothing about AI, but what it does say is that you get paid for a first draft, a second draft, and a third.
Right.
Well, if AI writes the first draft,
then you don't get paid
for that first draft. Mm. And the studio could then say, well, you didn't actually write this, you just did a punch up or an edit pass, so we're going to only pay you this smaller amount of money. And so, look, I'm not here to say all AI is bad. It could potentially be a tool, the same way that a car is a tool or the typewriter is a tool. We just want to make sure that that tool is not being used to cut writers out of the process. Mm-hmm. And while that technology might not be here today, it could be here in 2 or 3 years.
So
we want to have that protection in our contract now.
100%. Smart, smart, smart. And how have you, tell us about how the way in which you've been affected personally as an actor,
as a writer. Well, break it down. So I had 3 projects in different stages of development before the strike started. And per the strike rules, we are not interacting with the studios. We're not doing work. You know, it's now been 5 months that I've not been able to work on those projects. I don't know if they're going to series or not. I'm not being paid for that work. And it's really stressful. And, you know, the thing I love about Slay is I love the consistency. Mm-hmm. And I love being able to control what, you know, is in front of me and tackling that thing. And I have no control over the strike. I have
Absolutely.
No control over my day-to-day.
How does that affect you?
Oh my God, it's so...
Because Fran, like, you are a person, like, there is nobody literally in the Slay gym that turns up a couple of minutes before their session, stands on the phone to their mum, ends the clock. In fact, most of the time you walk in.
One thing about me, I'm going to be chronically early. I'm like a premature baby. I'm going to show up like right before I'm supposed to be there. A bundle of joy. You're going to love me when I get there, but I'm going to be just a little early.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And it's something that I have, you know, thanks to therapy, I've gotten really comfortable with accepting things that I can't control. And again, the gym has been a welcome release for me because I can control it. I can show up. I can set goals for myself. I can see progress. Mm-hmm. And I really need that, especially, you know, even when there's no strike. I don't have control of if I'm going to get the job, if the show's going to be a hit, if I'm going to get assigned an episode, how much I'm going to get paid for the thing. And so I've needed to find things in my life that give me structure and stability. And so the strike has been hard. The uncertainty, not knowing when it's going to end.
I can't imagine. There was talk of it, you know, things moving forward this week.
So
there was a little flutter in the morning.
So we're back in negotiations, which is really wonderful. I think it was 40 days before the studios had come back to us where, I mean, we were just literally at a standstill. Mm-hmm. And that's really difficult because negotiations require everybody to come to the table. And so the solidarity on the picket lines has been incredible. And that's really been the silver lining for me, connecting with other writers. Writing can often be such a solitary experience.
Now take us to the picket lines, Fran. What's it like when you get there? Because there was a big planned picket last week.
Yes.
From Netflix to Paramount. I want to tell me what it's like on the picket lines. Break it down for me.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's a party. And what's really funny is the rumors are that the studios are very unhappy that it's a party. We are outside like shaking ass, you know, doing themes. We've had all different sorts of, you know, like black pickets, comedy writer pickets, superhero pickets, horror fans. I mean, people dressing up in costume, people from different shows showing up. I know like Boy Meets World did a picket one day and like, you know, the actress who played Topanga was there. And like, it's a lot of people coming together and saying, we love this industry. The work that we do is valuable. We know we deserve more and better. But for me, what's been really most paramount is making sure that this industry is stable for the new generation, mm-hmm. the young people who are saving all their money to come to LA and have a dream. I want to make sure that if they get that first acting job or they get in that writer's room, that they're protected, that they're being fairly compensated, and that they're able to make a life for themselves. Mm. And that's the sentiment that's on the picket lines, which has been really encouraging.
Mm. From the outside looking in, you know, there's so many of our clients here at Slay in the industry. And so it's the topic that we tackle every single day. Everybody's giving updates on where they're at, you know, the discussions that are being had behind the scenes. But one of the things that's really apparent to me is it feels like it's this David and Goliath battle.
Yeah.
It feels obviously like they're, you know, the studios obviously have a great deal of power and a great deal of say so. And that, you know, you guys, the writers, the actors, they're battling for your livelihoods on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I was really shocked. You know, I think early on in the strikes, there were some very, very harsh comments that were said from very senior people in the industry with regards to the fact that they can wait out the strikes.
Yeah.
And that they're in a comfortable position. But as a person who is on the receiving end, directly impacted financially, you know, in so many different ways and aspects of your life, like, how does that feel every single day?
Yeah, I mean, it is demoralizing, but the thing that has, again, been really beautiful is the support that we've had within our unions and from just regular people. I remember one day I was wearing my Writers Guild t-shirt and I was at Best Buy and I struck up a conversation with this elderly couple. They were so sweet and they were asking about the strike and how it was going. And I was telling them, oh, I'm here to buy batteries because I had bought a little bullhorn. And
I love that. As if you need a bullhorn.
I was like, they're not going to steal my money and my voice. I will be using a bullhorn on the picket lines. And so I had this great conversation with them. And as I was going into the Best Buy, the guy kind of chased me down and he handed me $50 and he said, I want to pay for those batteries.
Aww.
And I was like, are you kidding me? It was just, it was so nice. And I've had so many little micro interactions like that. Mm-hmm. I've had people Venmo me and say, you know, buy some pizzas on the picket lines. Mm. I called my managers and I said, y'all need to come and be out here. If you want this 10%, the strike needs to end.
Did they turn up?
They turned up. They did coffee. They did donuts. They did sandwiches.
Good for them.
It was really incredible. And so, again, it is frustrating to hear these people at the top say that they're going to wait us out. But the reality is our resolve is stronger and they can't do the work without us. Mm-hmm. You know, I often joke that, you know, these people don't need multi-millions of dollars. But the reality is they don't create any of these characters. They're not using the stories of their lives that are then making people laugh and making people cry. And the memes that you share on Twitter and in your group chats, like, that's coming from us. Mm. And I know it's valuable because it's paying for somebody's second home. Mm-hmm. So why can it not then put food on the table for the writers and the actors who are, you know, giving so much of themselves? And as frustrating as it is, the reality is the strike will not go on forever. And I know that we will win and it'll be worth it and make the industry better.
Yes, it will. And we'll be here for you as and when it does.
Yes, I'll be able to do 3 days a week again.
Are we going to do... I think we should be having a post-picket party.
I'm exhausted.
You deserve a break, honestly.
Yes.
But aside, obviously, you know, we talked about control. And I guess this idea of surrender, but have there been any other creative pursuits or anything else, physical or creative, that you've explored during the strike that you've been able to turn some attention to?
Well, honestly, like, creating content has been really nice for me because, you know, for a long time I was creating content as part of my job. I was making a source of income from making YouTube videos. And then I made this move to TV largely so that I didn't feel so confined to the internet because you can't really control it. You don't know how well a video is going to do. Mm. Your numbers go up and down. Something gets taken down. A whole platform disappears.
Yeah.
And so what's been really nice about the strike is that I feel like it's given me the freedom to just create with reckless abandon. Mm. I don't have to have a meeting. I don't have to get approval. Mm-hmm. I don't have to pitch to anybody. Yep. I don't have to ask for permission. I'm not making money. I'm just like, oh, I have an idea. I'm going to make this thing. And it's really kind of taken the pressure off, which is not something I realized I really needed. So that really has been a surprising thing for me.
100%. I, for one, have been loving your Strike content. Strike Fran is one of my favorite Frans. Like, it's been informative. It's been sassy. It's been, like, triggering. It's been all the things. Like, you go through this range of emotions.
That's so funny.
Honestly, though, Fran, if there was one piece of content to come out of this strike, it had to be the Drew Barrymore impression.
It's so funny because I got a comment today that said, you know, I've been following you for years because I've been on the internet a long time. And they said, "No fucks, Fran is my favorite Fran." And I was like, it's so true. Like, I really am in that era of I've been here a long time. And, you know, I've had moments where I thought, oh, should I say this thing? But the reality is the people who know, love, and appreciate my work, they're going to be here for me. And if you're not here for me, you and I were never supposed to work together.
Absolutely.
I have no ill will towards Drew Barrymore. When the strike ends, if she wants to hire me, Drew, hit me up. Like, let's go. I'm at UTA. Like, I'll be very happy. I need a job. But at the same time, like, if you watch my content, my hope is that you see that I'm trying to be, you know, informative and honest and use humor in a way that's disarming and hopefully opens your eyes and opens your perspective. And the reality is we needed Drew Barrymore to stand in solidarity with us. And I'm so glad that she's chosen to do that.
I think it was your video that did it, honestly, because we were talking about the video literally 24 hours before Fran dropped the video. What, 24 hours later, Drew's like,
I mean, I will say
out.
On TikTok, it's got like 500,000 views, which is, again, the pressure to like, oh, I have to make be viral and do it's gone away in a way that it has really changed the game for me because I just make something that I enjoy. I feel good about it. I leave it. And then the next day I'm like, oh, cool. That did well. What's next?
Yeah.
And so I'm glad people liked it. And I love doing impressions.
You're very good at impressions. I've always prided myself on accents and impressions, but you killed it. Like, if you haven't seen this video, please just check it out.
Oh, that's so funny.
You have to.
No, I like the opportunity to like think about content in a different way. Like, I could just sit here and explain the strike to you. But if I could do Drew Barrymore's voice, and she's so sorry, and she's just, I just really want you guys to feel where I'm coming from. So I'm like, oh, this is a funny way to approach this that I hadn't seen anyone do.
It was brilliant.
You know, pack a punch, but also
I watched her video, then watched your video, then went back and watched her video again. Just for comparison. Oh. But where does No Fucks Fran come from? Like, obviously West Palm Beach, Florida. You know what I mean? But you've had your fair share of haters, right? Online has been the place where you kind of grew your name and your brand and your like everything that you are.
Yeah.
Like, how difficult is it to come from the world of online content then, you know, into the industry?
It's really hard. I mean, I heard this quote somewhere, and I don't know who said it, but it's definitely, I didn't come up with this, but someone said, the great thing about the internet is it gives everyone a voice, but the terrible thing about the internet is it gives everyone a voice. And that's real. You know, a lot of people turn to the internet to find community for better or for worse. And there are a lot of people who are unhappy with where they're at in life, and it's really difficult for them to watch other people living their truth. That's not just exclusive to the internet. But for me, as a Black woman who, you know, built a large part of my audience and brand talking about social issues, there's always going to be people who are uncomfortable with the honest truths about our nation's history, about the challenges that marginalized people are dealing with. Historically, that's always been the case, right? You use the David and Goliath analogy with the strike. You know, people aren't just going to hand you equality. They're not just going to hand you rights. You have to stand up for yourself and speak truth to power. And people don't always like that.
No, 100%.
And so I've dealt with a lot of harassment throughout my career. And
now, it says on Wikipedia that you once had a stalker. Is that person still alive?
I feel like that is a generous way to describe this loser's behavior. You know, I don't know what this person is doing anymore. And I think to your earlier question about No Fucks Fran, I feel like I'm at a stage in my life, especially as I've gotten older and I've as accomplished all these different things, where I like myself so much that I really don't care if other people don't like me. Mm-hmm. And the thing my mother always says is, don't worry when they're talking, worry when they stop talking. Mm. And we put our time and energy into the things that are important to us. Even the things we say, oh, I hate this thing.
Mm-hmm. What were they doing?
You make time to hate that thing. Oh, making so many videos about me. I think this person had made like 40 something videos about me, including 2 music videos.
That's quite dedicated. Music videos.
You got studio time for Francesca? Studio time is expensive. You know, you saving your coins so you could sing a little ditty about Francesca. You a fan.
Wow.
And so, you know, I had the show at MTV, Decoded, mm-hmm. which was about race and pop culture. Yeah. And people would edit clips of me together to say things that I hadn't said. So kind of do these like super cuts where I would just be saying like, I hate men. I hate white people. Like, men should die or whatever. And listen, I know how time consuming editing is. Mm-hmm. To look at my face for that length of time, again, doesn't mean that it wasn't hurtful.
This was before the days of InShot, I assume.
Oh, yes. This was, I mean, truly, without a shred of irony, back in my day, we used to have to upload the footage to the computer and wait for it to render into Final Cut, and then you could edit together. I mean, now you can just click a button on your phone and edit very quickly.
So he was doing the most. Oh, let's just put it that way.
The absolute most. Such and again, shame. At the time, it was very difficult, and I'm human. It's never a good thing when people say untruthful or hurtful things about you.
But one of the things, Fran, that I love about you is the way in which you come back, you know? One of the things that I look forward to, actually, is you walking in the gym and explaining to me how somebody had the gall to say something like to you on Instagram or in your comments. But what was the last thing that somebody said to you online that was throwing shade, and how did you end their whole entire existence?
Well, I often like highlight.
I heard it was yesterday.
Oh, it was yesterday. I don't know if it was yesterday, but I definitely remember at least a few days ago. My favorite is when someone on Twitter says something negative about me, like, oh, someone was like, oh, Francesca, she's not even like famous. She's a micro celebrity. Like, no one cares about you. And then I went to their Twitter and I was like, but you following me? Mm-hmm. So I like screenshot that you're following me, and I was like, and yet here you are. My friend Crystal said something that I say all the time, is the only thing you and I have in common is that we're both worrying about what I'm doing. So like, you know, I remind people this, I'm not special in this regard. Everybody has antagonist, whatever scale. Sometimes it's someone in your family. Sometimes it's the person that you work with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, it's the guy who pulls up the car next to you and is talking shit.
Why is there always someone in your family? That's the bit that I don't get.
Somebody in your family.
What the fuck's that about?
But my point is it's not about you. It's always about them. Mm-hmm. And it is, and I say this as someone that's had to reckon with this in myself, that sometimes the person that you feel the most annoyed by, they're reflecting something in you that you wish that you had, or something that you don't necessarily like about yourself. This isn't to say it's always the case, but if you get real with yourself and you say, I put aside time to hate watch this show, why am I doing that? Is this telling me like, oh man, I've always wanted to write for TV, or maybe I wish I was an actress, or oh, look at her body, blah, blah, blah. Are you feeling maybe insecure about your own body and you're projecting it onto this person? And that takes time to get to that place. But now that I'm at that place, I feel less bothered and concerned when a stranger chooses to follow me online so that they can leave comments every time I post some content. To me, that says that someone who's not fulfilled offline, because this is where they're putting their energy. And I think people who are truly happy and fulfilled put their energy into things that bring them joy and happiness.
100% smack down. You nailed it. Fran, talking about that baldy. That body, though, Brian.
It's a shame this is a podcast because the arms are arming. Second Amendment.
Arms. O-R-M-S.
Oh, yes. We don't spell arms with A. We spell it with an O around here.
Exactly. We couldn't bring you on the Slay podcast and obviously not talk about your health and fitness journey.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, when did we meet?
It's been 2 years.
2 years.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
It's flown by. Yeah. I mean, look, I've been someone who has been really into fitness for most of my life. I remember my senior year of high school, you got like a free period, mm-hmm. and I used that free period to get a gym membership and go to the gym before school. And I
makes
really
me so
it.
Happy. I want to cry.
Yeah, I've just always made it a priority, and I've been so fortunate that, you know, when I was in New York, I had a really great gym community, very similar to here, where it was a small studio. There was maybe only three or four of us working out. Everyone was playing music, having a good time, and I was so sad when I left New York. Like, I can't believe I'm leaving this gym. And through a girl that was on the show that I was working on, she had a trainer. I worked with him for a little bit. When he left LA, he was like, "Well, I'm going to introduce you to this trainer." And I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I feel like I just got this trainer that I really like, and he connected me with you." And I was like, "Oh, I don't want to leave my apartment."
I remember our conversation.
Like, "Can you come to my apartment?" And Lou you was like, "No, come to the gym. You'll love it." And I was like, "Yeah." Oh, okay.
I remember you were like, "I've got this great gym at home," and I'm like, just get your butt down
I'm
here.
Such, I think I'm such a creature of habit. Like, I had gotten into my groove, and I just was in my mind. I was like, "This is what I'm doing." And I came here, and I loved it. And I have become an evangelist for Slay. I've told and shared it with other people. The community has been incredible. And the thing that I've told a number of people that I think is really important is that you really don't try to push anyone to be anything that they're not. Mm-hmm. You just say, be the best you can be, show up for yourself, push yourself, set whatever goals fit for you. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to make a bunch of Lou clones. Mm. Every single person that's here has a different body, mm-hmm. different relationship with their body, and they're showing up for themselves. And I love that. I love that so, so much.
100%. One of the things I love about your journey, if I might share a little bit, is that, you know, you're one of few people that comes in and is not concerned at all about the scales. Aesthetics, hell yeah. you know, we are gearing up for Fran's 40th.
Yes.
We're very excited about that. And there are a few, you know, aesthetic goals that we have. You know, these shoulders, we want them bolder shoulders.
Yes.
And it's just been so nice and refreshing to hear somebody come in and not talk about weight.
Yeah. What's interesting is, like, when I look at old pictures of myself, mm-hmm. and I think about how stressed I was about my body and my weight, and I look at where I'm at now, I'm like, I look so much better, and I'm like a smooth 40 pounds heavier mm-hmm. than I was back then. Mm. Or I remember, like, when I was in high school and college, it was just like, I have to be 130 pounds. Now I'm 5'10".
Yes.
There's no way in hell 130 pounds is going to look okay on me. Some people, it might look, you know, that might be their ideal or their goal or whatever. But for whatever reason, I had just zeroed in on this number. Mm-hmm. And to your point, what I've realized, especially because I've been prioritizing my strength and finding different ways to, like, be active outside of the gym, I feel really good about my body when I have a little bit of muscle and definition, and I have a butt, and I got a little boobies going on. And that requires eating a lot of food, lifting really heavy, and your body is going to get heavier as a result. You
100%.
Know, I'm thinking about the way my clothes fit, the achievements I'm able to make.
Talking
able to
of achievements.
Do some pull-ups, you know, be able to do 3 pull-ups. I couldn't do pull-ups before.
I know. Like, Fran, for those at home that don't know and don't have the pleasure of literally seeing her 2 to 3 times a week, she comes straight in the gym, warms up. First thing she does is gets those pull-ups
in. Pull-ups.
And sometimes she does sneaky pull-ups behind everyone's back. She's like, I'll
pop. And everyone's like, wait a second, you didn't tell us you were starting the pull-ups.
Exactly. And I said to you this week, because I'd seen her for a couple of weeks now just hitting these 2 pull-ups. I'm like, girl, you're ready for 3 pull-ups. Let's go.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But that's what I love so much, is this idea that And to your point about the scale thing, I've had a lot of trainers over the course. That was my college graduation gift. As I said, I want a personal trainer. The first time I'd ever had a trainer. And unfortunately, I have worked with people that have forced, you know, these weigh-ins and restrictive eating. And I worked with this guy one time, and he was like doing bodybuilding stuff and was encouraging me to just eat the same meal over and over and over again. That's how you're going to lose weight. So there are people who say, I want to increase my fitness. I want to, you know, have a better relationship with my body. And they unfortunately get connected with people that force them or encourage them down unhealthy paths. And so it is really crucial for me to be in an environment where I see different body types. I see people enjoying themselves, not being restrictive. We can go out and have a drink. We can go out and eat how we want. And then we come back into the gym and we kick ass versus, oh my God, I gotta write down everything that I'm eating, and I gotta weigh everything. And like, if I eat this bad, I can't eat this whole food group. I don't want to live like that. Life is too short. And making fitness a priority for me, my mental health, again, with everything happening in the world and the strike, I know I'm going to come to the gym and I know what it's going to be like. And I know I'm going to kick ass and it gets me through the day. And I feel the difference if I don't show up.
100%. I always keep an eye on you when you're training. You know that. I'm always looking at the weights that are being lifted. I'm like, if I can hear Fran talking, she can definitely be lifting heavier.
That's the other
thing. I'm like, if she's going on, I'm like, she can be lifting heavier.
I'm in here, and I sometimes am like, I think I'm the only one who showed up to work today because I am dying over here. How is everybody laughing? And sometimes here's I can laugh I and say, sing along, but most days I'm dying.
In recent weeks, Fran's been fairly quiet. Ever since we got this 40th birthday rolling in, there's been some work going on, because we call it, once, you know, people start to get a bit chit-chatty, we call it the Slay Cafe. Mm. Well, I tell you who has shown up to Slay cafe, and that's Fran.
No.
but no, I'm really enjoying watching you just like really knuckle down, hone in, focus. Because if there's one thing that I've noticed about you is that when you focus on something, you just go for it. Mm-hmm. That discipline that you have, you said actually a couple of weeks back that you were an overachiever and teacher's pet. And I see that in you every single day here at the gym.
I am 100% the teacher's pet.
I love it. But how, we talked about this and touched upon it slightly briefly earlier with regards to the strikes, but that sense of control, how does stress, what role does that play in your ability to meet your health and fitness goals?
Oh man. I mean, when I'm really stressed, I need an outlet, and the gym has really become that outlet for me. And in the past, stress would debilitate me and I would be like, I'm going to stay in bed. I'm not going to do anything. And it would just be like a self-fulfilling prophecy of just making me feel worse. Mm-hmm. And then like, I don't want to do anything.
How would your habits change when you felt stressed?
Well, I would say I would definitely like binge eat like crap, not be active, lots of laying around, lots of sleeping. And so the thing that I think about when I think about like self-care and mental health, it's working on those things when things are good so that when things are bad, you're able to stay consistent. And I think what often happens, and I've done it too, is you try to like change everything at once. You're like, I'm going to throw out my whole fridge. I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week. It's like, no, that's not reasonable. Mm-hmm. If you can only go 2 days, if you can only go one day, if you can only prioritize cooking one meal, do that. And so making those small incremental changes has made it easier for me to stay consistent when things aren't going really well, because now I'm at a place where if I don't go to the gym, I feel bad. I'm like, oh, I feel sad. I miss it. I went on vacation and I was like, oh, I miss the gym.
Isn't it weird?
Here I am.
That first vacation.
I'm like, I really want to be like working out. I miss being able to have that consistency.
Were you on vacation with friends?
I was.
Did you want to drag them into like the nearest gym or just like hit a bodyweight workout? What is that?
I definitely worked out in my hotel room, and we were in Spain, so we walked a lot, which was really great. And we went to the beach and we swam. And so like we were active, and I will say that's been something that I have loved about like this stage of my life, is my friends are really active. And so when we go on vacation, we cook. We don't all go out to eat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We work out, we do yoga, we go on hikes, you know, we're swimming, we're, you know, we're on the boat, but we're also swimming. So it's really nice to have a community of friends that are also prioritizing their health in that way. And it makes it feel easier to keep up with it.
Talking about community, Fran, we started our own tennis club a little while back, didn't we?
We did.
We did. There was just me and Fran. But I think we ended up meeting up just for a little. Fran actually bought a tennis ball machine.
I have a teacher's pet. So I've been playing tennis for almost 2 years.
Literally.
Almost 2 years, and I bought that tennis ball machine. I don't even think I was at 1 year when I bought that
machine.
Best
investment ever.
Oh, I love it so much. It forces me to play. And I think what I learned about myself, because I never did sports. I went to performing arts school. We didn't have sports. And I had this moment of, oh, when you do a thing over and over and over again, you get better.
That's right.
Sports.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Turns out that's the point of practice. Turns out you get real good.
I found out
The hard way.
Oh my God.
When I showed up to play tennis against Fran, I wouldn't say with Fran, I would say against Fran, because it was extremely competitive.
I'm just so excited that I can officially say that I played tennis with an Olympian and I was able to keep up and maybe even like beat you.
Keep up. You scored a couple of points on my arm.
Yeah. No, it was really
fun. Left it in the car. I said to Eric, I'm never playing tennis with Fran again. She's positively scary.
It was so fun. But I'm very competitive. And what's been so fun about tennis, again, is that I genuinely started from zero.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to play at all. And to your point about community, as I got involved with like a local tennis clinic, I love the people I play tennis with. I love our coach. He's like this curmudgeon-y, weird guy who has all of these like strange phrases and stuff. But I love it. It's so fun. And it made me just want to keep coming back. And I was able to see my progress.
Mm-hmm.
I could not keep the ball in the court to start. I didn't know how to direct the ball. I didn't know, I had no strategy, and now I do, and I love that about it.
Mm. You know, it's really interesting. My ears peaked up then when you talked about strategy, because I feel like that's actually been one of the things that has underpinned a lot of your fitness journey.
Yeah.
Has been this almost development of strategy and understanding that, you know, in order to get results, there needs to be a plan, but also in a stepwise fashion.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And also, I think there are times when, you know, there is no plan, right? And there are days when, and it's completely normal, the struggle is literally just turning up, right?
Yeah.
What do you do on those days, Fran? How do you prioritize your self-care on those days?
Well, I think about something that I talk about in therapy a lot is the why of my work and the why of what showing up for myself looks like and the things that I'm working towards. And so I apply that to everything. Like, I'm going to the gym, yes, because I want my body to look a certain way, but I also want to maintain my health and my longevity. I want to be here for as long as possible, and I want to have the highest quality life possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an only child. I have a great relationship with my parents, and I'm very fortunate that I'm in a position to assist my parents. I want to be able to be here for them, to mm-hmm. take care of them, and give them the highest quality of life possible. And I want to feel hot.
You know, like, right?
I think those are like neck and neck, but I think being able to wake up and put your clothes on and feel good about the way you look and how you present to the world, it can really change and improve your mindset. And for me, because I am someone that's so results and driven and process driven, being able to achieve when I come work out makes me feel really good. If I don't know what's going on with my career, if I don't know, you know, if the strike's going to end tomorrow, or if things are going to work out, this person I went on a date with, whatever, I know I can go to the gym and I know that I can set goals for myself and I can achieve them.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things I've noticed, Fran, that you do religiously when it comes to the gym is the outfits.
Yes. Okay, so this is also part of it, right? Like, I remember when I first started going to the gym, and I think a lot of people do this, where all of my gym clothes were kind of just like old random
sad
things.
We call them sad.
Yeah, it was a lot of, so I, you know, I was a theater kid, so I always had like shirts from different plays that I had been in or different competitions I'd gone to, mm-hmm. and those were always like my gym outfits. I would have like a big shirt on and like leggings. Again, nothing wrong with that, but I remember full circle moment being in the gym and seeing girls in like these cute little outfits and being like, that fucking girl wore that outfit to the gym. Like, who did you think she is? Like, ugh, we're here to work out. It's not a fashion show. But like, it was really my insecurity showing and thinking like, I wish I had the confidence to dress like that in the gym. And so I had a trainer who said, you know, let's set some goals for yourself and have some rewards that have nothing to do with, you know, going out and drinking and partying and eating like shit. And so my rewards were buying gym outfits.
I love that. And I love her already.
I love dressing up for the gym. I think about it the night before. I'm like, what do I want to wear? I have all these different hats that match my outfits. I'm like, I'm going to wear my teal sleigh hat and my teal Old Navy outfit. I'm going to wear my Farm Rio Adidas with my pink hat. Or like, I start hat first and I'm like, you know, I think I want to do this, and I'm going to do all black with like a pop of color. Like, it makes me excited. And I think especially for anyone who struggles with going to the gym, making it an event for yourself rather than being like, oh, this is something I have to do. Like, when you get dressed up for a wedding, you're excited to be at the wedding. 100%. You're excited for everyone to see your outfit.
There's a level of anticipation.
Yes.
Who might you meet in this outfit?
Exactly.
Where might you go afterwards?
It's a conversation starter. I love when I get to the gym and it's like, ooh, that is really cute. Where did you get that from? I'm like, oh, that's great. You start talking to people. And when I play tennis, it's so funny. Mm-hmm. I always dress up for tennis.
Same.
And the girls at tennis are like, I'm wearing this today because I know Fran's gonna be at tennis and she always dresses up, and they're like, oh, hello, do you see that I'm wearing this dress? And I'm like, mm-hmm,
isn't it funny how every I think you really raised the game. You raised the game in the gym. We've actually started now like almost a recycling box for like secondhand like sports bras. And obviously
now
everybody's
sad that I have boobs suddenly, because I looked at those little bras, I was like, I cannot put these Polly Pockets.
You're gonna have to throw some in. Throw some in. It needs to be a rotation.
I should. You know, I'm doing those chest presses and suddenly my little titty meat is larger than it's ever been before. And I'm crediting Slay.
That's my titty meat.
Yes. It's a team effort.
Exactly. I'll take it. I love it. But Fran, no, honestly, you honestly lift the place every time you walk in. Fran, you were at our wedding a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
The words that you said were so kind and so heartfelt, even if Eric was too drunk to remember them. I remember
Eric
every
was
single
wasted.
Thing.
Well, I meant every word of it, and I think people get, when people get too sincere, sometimes people can be like, eye rolly, and, you know, a lot of people maybe negatively say, like, it's like a family, but I really do feel that way. I've become such great friends with people here. I've run into people on the picket lines, and friends are like, who is that? I'm like, oh, we go to the same gym. And I love it. It makes me feel so supported and comforted. I've brought friends from college here. I've brought friends from work.
You've thrown
here.
A few people under the bus.
I brought people here. I brought someone that I was dating, came and worked out with me at the gym a few times. So I try to practice what I preach. This space is really important to me. This practice is really important to me. And anyone that I can share it with, I'm happy to do it. And I feel really thankful that I'm part of this very elite, special group. And, you know, part of my practice has been kind of removing my own self-doubt and realizing like, oh, if I'm in community with these awesome, hardworking, talented people, it's because I deserve to be here and I've earned the spot here. So
I don't even think you deserve to. I think it's the fact that you are one And that's, you know, one of the things I have to keep reiterating. Yeah. I think sometimes there's that you stand from the outside and you think you're looking in. No, Fran, you're here because are one.
No, it's so real. And that imposter syndrome is something that I've had to like battle my whole life. And I think, unfortunately, for a lot of people, especially in creative industries, it can be hard to like quiet that voice. But the same way, like working out is a practice and, you know, you're building muscle, you don't pick up the 50-pound weight to start, you start small. It's the same way with self-care and self-confidence and self-love. It's like a practice of, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be here. Like these awesome people around me and I'm here too. Like somebody believes in me enough to give me space to be in community with these people.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing I think about the gyms in general is, you know, especially this one, people literally, this is the area of their life that they don't necessarily have the expertise in. Know how to write, know how to show up, know all of those things, are absolute bosses in their given industries. And, you know, we're really here to support them in the thing that they feel sometimes the most insecure about. We're here to provide that kind of assistance. And so it really is just this level playing field. And I think that there's this sometimes a common misconception that everybody in the gym knows what the hell they're doing. When the reality of it is it's no, everyone's starting their day in the exact same way, which is a complete and utter leveler. And I just, you know, love seeing the way you bring everybody together. There's two floors here in the Slay Gym. And with Fran in it, it literally just feels like one big circle because your joy and your spirit and your energy just fills the place. And we're so, so fortunate to have you. We wouldn't have it any other way.
Thank you so much. I'm really proud of myself for not crying because I'm an emotional person.
Let's not cry on the podcast.
Yes, but I feel the exact same way. I look forward to being here every time that I'm here.
Great, because you've got burpees tomorrow. Fran, we absolutely adore you. We want to say a massive thank you for joining us on the Slay podcast. We can't wait for your 40th birthday.
Oh, yay,
and the celebrations that are coming.
Yes.
And we can't wait to see how those pull-ups come on as well.
Oh, thank you so much. As long as I don't have to do 40 burpees for my birthday.
41. Fran, we absolutely love you. Thank you. Oh,
thank you so much for having me, Lou.
That concludes this episode of Slay. Stay tuned for more empowering discussions on health and fitness. You can follow me at Louise Hazel and you can find Fran at Cheska Lee on social media. You can check out the Slay brand at Slay Athletic and don't forget to subscribe to the Slay podcast if you haven't done already on Spotify. And don't forget to download the Slay app for free on the App Store and join our online community.